We have wanted to have an interview with this person for some time. He has been in the UFO business for some time, at least 25 years with MUFON, before he quit in disgust in January of this year. We are going to talk to him about that and some other things as well, and then we'll bring him back later, probably next month, and we'll talk to him about some of the cases that he has really investigated. And he has some inside information on Roswell that we want to talk about, but not tonight. Tonight we're going to talk about MUFON and why Clarkson quit. Here's a man who's a police investigator, been in the military police before that, an MP, a plainclothes investigator, works for the state of Washington, and he quit in disgust. We'll find out why. James E. Clarkson on the line. Welcome to the show, James.
Well, it's a pleasure, Jerry. I'm glad to be here.
Well, James, 25 years of UFO investigation experience. Wow. Do I have that about right?
Oh, you sure do. That ought to be more than enough to fill the time.
Well, James, we'll see how much we can get in this hour, okay?
That's right.
Before we even get underway, were you the state director up in Washington State in February when we had the report of the encounter that turned out to be a helicopter?
No, actually, I checked the other day because an issue came up, and I turned in my resignation right about January.
Too bad. I was hoping you could shed a little light on that. Can you tell us a little bit about why you left MUFON after all these years? Clifford Cliff, the international director the other day, had nothing but sterling things to say about you, James.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I guess I was thinking about that because I knew that question would come up. I should just go back and give you just a bit of history. I joined the Mutual UFO Network in 1986, and that was because of a spectacular sighting that was all over the news, and I decided it was time to get off the sidelines. And I probably have held every position in the state. Mostly I worked on investigations, and mostly I always had credibility because I've approached this entire field with a foundation in regular criminal investigation.
Yeah, that's one reason I'm glad you consented to do the interview, because you have quite a record. I mean, quite a background in police
work. That's correct. I started off in the military police. That's how I came to Washington State. When I was discharged, I thought the state was so beautiful, I decided to stay. And, in fact, I figured it out. That was in 1975. Well, any event, I became a police officer. I've also been a deputy sheriff, a corrections officer. After I disabled out of the police department with a bad knee, I ended up being a child abuse detective. And I'm still in investigations, only a different kind now. I work for the state. And I work for a state agency doing what we call administrative investigations, which is a variation on the same mindset that I think you can bring to almost any investigation. But to return to the point, why did I leave MUFON? It probably started last summer. I met Clifford Clift, and I found him very likable. But at the same time, I started wondering what was really going on, because I had a lot of respect for James Carrion, too. Of course, I didn't know either of them very well, and I probably truthfully have to say that I still don't. I have been working full-time in a regular job because I'm one of those people who hasn't figured out yet how to make ufology pay the bills, and I know there aren't very many people who can truthfully say that. You don't do this because you want money, and I'm not sure you do it because you want fame. I think it's something that gets in your blood and you can't let it go. I was dealing with trying to recruit investigators, and that, of course, is one of the most important tasks that every state director has, is to be out there, contact members of the public, be the spokesperson for the Mutual UFO Network, and at the same time, you're always looking for people who might want to become involved and might want to volunteer their time. And one of the oddest things, looking back, is that I recruited several people who were people who were, made reports. And in the process of interviewing them and conducting an investigation, when it was all over and done, I said, well, have you ever thought about becoming involved? And I met some extraordinary individuals. One of them is now a very close friend. And oddly enough, he's also an airline pilot, but that's a different story. I didn't know that for quite a while. I ran into a situation where all at once, one of my best field investigators, a lady who also was a state employee, who I personally had recruited, I trained her up, she passed the test, became a fully functional investigator, and in fact, ironically, she's also the one person that I could always count on to go to the symposium. She started sending me emails back early in December and saying, I can't get into the system. And I thought that was odd, so I checked her membership, and she was completely paid up. And I started trying to see, of course, being a state director, I have everybody's log on and password. So I tried logging on, and I discovered that if you went on there as her, you couldn't get into the system. A little while later, I discovered that this other gentleman that I was working with up north in Port Angeles, a retired man, I had not recruited him, but he had joined on his own, and he was interested, and I was starting to get him more involved. In fact, he was doing some terrific work and discovered some previously unreported sightings of black triangles up by a place called Crescent Lake.
Is this the airline pilot?
No.
Okay.
This was a separate investigator, but that investigator completely disappeared off the roster, and I checked, and he was paid up, and I couldn't figure out why nobody called me, nobody notified me, nobody did anything. They were just, one of them was locked out, and one of them was just gone. So I started trying to figure out who to contact. I had had almost no contact with the board of directors before. And I ended up being bounced from across three or four different directors, and everybody said, well, that's interesting, but I don't know if we can help you. And so nobody seemed to be able to take responsibility, and nobody said, well, they would look into it. They just said, well, it's not me. And then, unfortunately, I ended up encountering Marie Malzahn, who I knew almost nothing about. She is a very mysterious figure who arrived, as far as I can tell, in ufology and in MUFON out of nowhere, because she suddenly was the director in Idaho. I had never heard of her before. And she called me, in fact, several months before and asked me if I could handle cases in Idaho because she was going to be doing some work for the board with no specifics attached. The next thing I know, she's on the board of directors, and I was referred to her to get my problem solved. And I think there were a lot of other frustrations that were kind of building up in the background. Although I liked a lot of the people that I dealt with in Washington, and I had developed a really good working relationship with a few other state directors, there were things that I had heard that really alarmed me. And this all leads up to my exchanging emails with Marie Malzahn, and I asked her for help, not for myself, not because I wanted anything. All I wanted was somebody to tell me how to fix the problem with my investigators. And instead, I got this very condescending email where she informed me that she was my superior and that she didn't have to explain any decision that was made by the board. I blew up. And I guess I sort of had a reality shift. I suddenly said, why am I doing this? I felt like I was beating my head against the wall and I wasn't getting anywhere. So I had talked it over with my wife, I'd talked it over with other people, and in all honesty, I was probably the holdout. There were all of my key investigators in Washington State. We communicated frequently. And they all said, why are you doing this? You know, what is MUFON doing for you? You know, you've given all this time, you've done all this stuff, we think you're really good, why don't we just go independent? And so I guess all of these things were going on at once, and Marie Malzahn just crossed me, and I thought, why? I'm not going to be talked to that way. You know, I wouldn't put up with that at work, where I get paid a salary. Why am I going to put up with that in the field of ufology? I've always believed, more than anything else, that we all have to treat each other with respect and a little bit of consideration for the other guy. And I guess, and then the strangest thing happened was that after I quit, I stepped out into this world that I didn't even know existed. I didn't realize how many people had been fired or how many people had resigned. And suddenly there was like this whole other reality that I didn't even know about. The only inkling I had, and I'm not going to identify this particular director because he still works for MUFON, he told me a story about putting on this big event where he personally shelled out almost $8,000 to cover the bills when the dust settled. And instead of getting a congratulation from the board of directors, he was chewed out because his event was within 3 months of the symposium, and they basically said, well, you're taking dollars away from our symposium by competing with us. And I thought, well, that's ridiculous. Here's a guy doing... I had started talking to him about this event because I wanted to know how to do one myself, because I thought that's one of the coolest things I had ever seen, and here's a state director who's somebody that I would really like to emulate in the future. And instead I find out that he's frustrated, he's kind of dispirited, and he's hanging on because he loves the field and he doesn't know what else to do. And so I guess I just reached the point where I said, why am I doing this? And that's probably the best explanation I can give. I still have all the passion I ever had for UFOs, if not more so, and I've begun to see all of it, and I think in a broader context.
From what you're saying, James, it sounds like some of your fellow MUFON Washington State investigators have joined you in a new organization or something?
Well, yes and yes. I, on my own, started looking around, and I ended up talking to Ken Cherry, who I did not know before all of this. I didn't know any of the story. I didn't know about EPIC or anything else. And, of course, I am now the Washington State Director for EPIC, and I'm just beginning to explore the possibilities that can arise out of that. We do have a group of us that form something called UFOReality.org. which is my personal website at the moment.
If we go to that website, James, what do we see?
You're going to find articles that I've written. A lot of them were transferred from the old website. You're going to find a news feed from EPIC, my background, and a method of contacting us and talking about what we're all about. So what we are about is trying to approach this entire field from what we consider to be a professional perspective. Between this entire group of people, I've got pilots, ex-law enforcement people, people with engineering credentials, some of them are even certified in nuclear safety, and quite a wide variety of talent. And so we are offering our services wherever they will do the most good. I've been working with Peter Davenport more, who's one of the pioneers in this field and somebody that I knew way back when I first joined MUFON, because when he used to live in Seattle, he was heavily involved in the meetings up there. And he and I have appeared in many places together, just coincidentally, and I have the utmost respect for his dedication.
We all think Peter Davenport does a great job. I mean, no doubt about it. Have you seen his new home, the missile silo?
I haven't been there yet, and that's one of the things that Joanne and I plan to do this summer. We would like to get over east of Washington and say hello. I've never been to a missile silo, and it would be fun to say that I did.
Well, the late Peter Jennings certainly liked him. Remember him bragging on him on that UFO special?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Okay, let's get back to the subject at hand. And the Marine Corps lady, maybe she's just used to giving orders, you think?
And that may be. And I don't know the lady
Well, I don't know her. I've never really corresponded with her. I've written her a couple of times, heard nothing back.
And see, that's not fair, and I have to go right after that one. This is a volunteer organization, and we're supposed to be reaching out to the public, and we're most of all supposed to be reaching out to each other, because people who are really dedicated in this field need to support each other. I'm sorry, but there's just no excuse for being rude.
Well, now, to be honest, most of the international directors have always been responsive. Even Clifford Cliff these days, when he's under tremendous pressure, even from me, he responds most of the time. Did Clifford actually contact you and try to talk you to coming back? Or, he told me that he really hated to see you go.
No, to be honest, at that point, I had pretty well made up my mind, and I just said flat out that I was leaving. And I wrote him a long explanation, and basically all he said in response was, if that's what you want to do, that's fine. I accept your resignation.
Well, James, it's puzzling. As far as I can tell, even though Clifford denies it, it's a us-against-them mentality going on there. And there's been only complaints against a couple or three. People have moved on. You'd think as international director, Clifford would want to correct that. Maybe he can't, or I don't know. It's just strange behavior.
I have to agree, and I guess my take on that is not so much seeing anything sinister, except in a broad sense, because I see people like that, unfortunately, in state government. And it's a kind of survivor mentality. And if you glad hand everybody and don't really commit to anything, nobody can hold you accountable. And I have to say truthfully, that's what I'm seeing. I'm seeing some very rude behavior. I don't know Chase Kletsky very well, but I was totally just, I hung on every word when you interviewed her because she poured her heart out.
I
could tell
that
she was telling you exactly what she really felt.
Yeah, if people haven't heard that interview with Chase Kletsky, they need to do it. It's right here on our website. It's on demand. She was so gung-ho for MUFON, and then within a couple of weeks she was gone. And as far as I can trace back, it's all because of personalities, people who just really didn't give a damn about manners. And that's too bad. It's interesting that the board of directors is doing everything they can to stop anybody from saying, well, you need, some affirmation from the membership. Obviously, they like their jobs, and they know they're going to be replaced if they agree to anything. I have some comments coming up tomorrow on that, just before their MUFON symposium. The 2011 symposium in Irvine, California.
I think, quite frankly, that I hope, with apologies to Jim Mars, I would say that it's ruled by secrecy. It's a cryptocracy. Nobody quite knows where these people come from. They're just suddenly there.
Well, it's almost like they don't know themselves.
Or they don't want to tell.
Yes.
Well, that's the investigator in you, James. 25 years of police experience plus. Showing up there. You got a good point, though. Are you just moving on and forgetting about MUFON? I know you're a director of investigations for EPIC now. You just going to forget about MUFON?
Wow, there's the big question. I have high hopes for many of the people that are still in MUFON, and I guess that's the one thing I really want to stress. I am really aggravated and frustrated with the people at the top of MUFON. I have nothing but the utmost respect for all those volunteers out there and all the wonderful people that I met who love this subject and do the best they can, you know, in their spare time. Most of them have got jobs. Most of them are trying to take care of families, and they find the time to do this stuff. And I have high hopes for them. And I'm not sure it's the end of the world if MUFON ceases to exist and becomes something else, because as we all know, there's historical precedent for that. Even MUFON's own history, it rose out of the ashes of other organizations that were infiltrated and that became self-destructive and where there were toxic relationships at the top. This is not unprecedented.
James, it seems like most of their trouble started with the star team concept. Were you ever involved with that at all, with MUFON?
I was ready to go. One of my key people had signed up and had the credentials. I did talk to Richard Lang a lot. He and I kind of hit it off, and we ended up just becoming friends over the phone. And my heart kind of went out to him because he was really upset when it all fell apart. He did not want, he wanted to make it work. And I'm talking about the most controversial part, which is, of course, is the partnership with Bigelow. And that is a tough one, and I understand why people had mixed feelings about it and still do. I get it.
You know, I've watched these star team managers come and go really fast, and it's almost as if someone somewhere does not want it to work. I mean, you know, at least for the public. What do you think about this, you know, everybody saying cases are siphoned off, they're taken all away, and nobody knows what happens to them?
Yes. Well, number one, an organization like MUFON is really, really easy to infiltrate. And we know historically, I believe back at the Robertson panel,
yes,
that they actually drafted a policy. And you have to remember that when the Robertson panel did its work, their work was classified at that point. And they actually said that UFO organizations should be monitored. And I keep thinking that what does MUFON really do? Unfortunately, what we do is we have provided a huge volunteer force of people who will go out and gather detailed information on how exactly the public interacts with the UFO phenomena. And, of course, the UFO phenomena could have two parts from the point of view of the insiders or the secret keepers or whatever you want to call them.
Flesh that out for me a little bit. What do you mean, two points?
Well, one side would be, obviously, there are sightings of craft that people in the know, people who have high security clearances, they know absolutely what people are seeing because it's probably some sort of top secret aircraft of some sort. Could even be an unconventional propulsion system. Could be a number of things. And so by analyzing what the public reports to describe a known aircraft, this gives them a better idea of, you know, whether or not they need to tighten their security or handle it differently or whatever. So it could be valuable intelligence information. And then, of course, there's the aspect that anything that MUFON puts out could also be read by foreign powers and therefore could have a national security concern. That's one side of the house. The other side of the house, of course, is I happen to be a believer. I do not pretend to know exactly what all is involved in this, and we could have a whole other discussion about that, but I am convinced that we are being contacted by some sort of non-human intelligence, and maybe intelligences, plural. Now, for what reason, what motive, or how they're going to manifest, I have no idea, but I think that the secret keepers, again, know way more about this entire phenomena, and they are trying to keep it hidden or at least put the brakes on.
You know, one of the best things or, you know, reasons that you could believe that MUFON's infiltrated by the government or some black operation, alphabet agency or whatever, is the way everything's happening. Mass confusion, people being played emotionally. They're at each other's throats. They don't seem to be able to be constructive because of personal things that have been egged on. I mean, now that's pretty familiar standard operating procedure.
Absolutely.
And maybe something like this is going on.
Well, probably. I'm trying to think, what is the most blatant example of disinformation? And it happens to be one where I think the motive was pure. And this is when then-Governor Fife Symington had his little press release about the Phoenix Lights after March 13th of 1997. I think it was about 6 days later or so, and he dressed up one of his aides in an alien costume and brought him in front of the press in handcuffs, and everybody laughed about it, and of course they played that video 100 times across national news so that nobody would talk seriously about the Phoenix Lights again. And of course at the time I had nothing good to say about Fife Symington, but then I find out that 10 years later to the day, just about, he has now disclosed that he saw the Phoenix Lights too, and that he was convinced that whatever it wasn't made on Earth, and it represented an unknown technology. So he finally came clean. Now, obviously, the man did deliberate disinformation, and he got questioned about it. And he said, I was trying to stop a panic. And knowing what I know about how the public reacts, I can sort of get the idea, because I've been around when 911 call centers get flooded, where everybody picks up the phone and calls 911. That is not a pretty scenario.
There's a lot of that in officialdom. You know, Big Brother knows best how to protect you. We just won't tell you. That type of thing. I mean, well, even your own mother would lie to you if she thought it was protecting you. So, I mean, I got an email here from a guy named Jeffrey, and he's not buying this idea that the files are being siphoned off by the government. He basically says, why would the government want to take these files? And I don't know. James, do you have a comment about that? I mean, a lot of people don't really believe the government's doing things like this. I believe they can do anything. But what do you think?
Well, I think you have to. I'd have to specify a little more and say, if you wanted a specific explanation, you're going to have to talk about specific incidents. As far as figuring out what the motive might be.
Well, in this email, he's basically saying that because files are missing, it's not prima facie evidence that the government took them.
No, It is not prima facie evidence. All that I can say is that I have some information that I received, and in fact I was allowed to see a couple of case files that you couldn't look them up normally in the CMS system, and something had been done with them. And when I read one of them, it appeared to be an on-the-ground encounter with some kind of a craft, and there was strong inferences that beings had been seen walking around.
Is this the Native American incident?
Yes.
Yeah, I think I know about that down in New Mexico, maybe Arizona.
I believe that it was.
Yeah. And we've had broadcast about that from the witness.
Clifford Mahudi was on our show in Angel Fire, New Mexico, and he talked about that case. It just goes to show you, a lot of people know about these things. The government's wasting their time and a lot of energy and a lot of assets deleting these things because the word gets around anyway.
I think they are, and I guess one of the things that irritates me quite a bit is that it appears that we're falling way behind, because other countries seem to take a different tactic with their public on this subject, and I don't see people panicking in the streets or civilization falling apart or life as we know it coming to an end. I mean, considering all the weird stuff we hear that humans do to each other, I'm not sure that hearing that the aliens had landed is going to be really disturbing.
I completely agree with you on that. I think we can pretty well adapt to almost any information they give us. We're going to take a break. Hey, coming up in part two, I want to discuss security and MUFON. And perhaps it's not so nefarious after all. It might just be a security breach. And a few other things with James Clarkson. I'm Jerry Pippin. We're looking at MUFON and what in the world is going on.